Welcome to Coming Up for Air, the Allies in Recovery podcast, with hosts Laurie McDougall, Kayla Solomon, and Dominique Simone Levine.
Okay, ladies, so today's discussion is going to be about a question that a mom wrote in, one of our members of Allies in Recovery. And she has a son who's around 22 years old, and he's experienced multiple overdoses. And he's also experienced some permanent brain damage where he's lost some fine motor, gross motor coordination issues, and involuntary movement. And he's been off of using any of the hard drugs that he was struggling with before these overdoses. He is smoking pot. And what's incredible about this story is mom and dad insisted that he see a psychiatrist, get a medical marijuana card, and only use pot that he's getting from the dispensary. He went and did it. He complied. But now mom and dad feel he's using too much. He agreed to not use when he's at work or when he's going to work, but he's using it at night to keep these involuntary kind of movements at a minimum, but also to help him sleep. But mom and dad feel that he's using it way too much at night, that he comes home from work, goes into his room, and then is just using pot all night long until he goes to sleep and then gets up and goes to work the next day. And they want to know how to handle it. Like, what should we do in this situation? And what's really great is this mom said, clearly it's not a problem for him, but it's a problem for us. And I think that that's an important clue, something to think about. So let's talk about this issue and what we think about that. What are your thoughts, Dominique, Kayla? What are you thinking about this?
My first thought is, we go back to our version of recovery, which is this process of taking parts of yourself back, increasing your function, taking care of the things that need to be taken care of. And it's so interesting just listening to you, Laurie. I'm thinking, is he actually doing the usual, you know, medical treatment of himself? Is the pot actually working medically for him? Is it helping him sleep? Is it helping him relax after work? Is it helping him feel like he's actually working on the tremors or whatever the physiological problems he's having? And I think those are very worthy questions. It's like, what purpose is it serving for him? Is it taking away from his function? Because that's always what we have to ask is, how is this impacting his function? And that's our version of recovery. It's not, there's a destination, you're off of everything, it's over. It's more, what's the impact on his function?
Both ways, right? Benefits to his function as well as detriments to his function. What is the pot doing that's beneficial? Certainly relaxing at the end of the day. It's probably keeping him off the other drugs or the worst of the cravings. He's able to sleep. He wakes up and he goes to work. If he's really not using, that means it's a full day of non-use. He's at, you know, half the day using maybe, which for a pot user is excellent because that is what pot users do. They use every couple hours all day long. That's how a pot user uses. So I would question the too much, especially since the daytime is pot free when he's working.
Yeah, I like your point. I would question the too much because the other thing that I think is key is that mom says it's problematic for us, clearly not for him. And I think you have to take that into account that one, to me, he's complied with an awful lot of their asks or requests of him by going to the psychiatrist, getting that legal marijuana card, and not going to the streets and buying pot from the streets. So I think that's a huge piece. He's putting effort in. He's got to be putting an awful lot of effort in keeping it just to the pot and using it really for these involuntary movements and for sleep. And I think rather than trying to change what's happening right now, yeah, maybe he is using it too much. but instead reinforcing the effort that he's putting in to try and better what's going on in his life, because this is complicated. This is a lot. I think I would come at it from that approach, and I would wait for those moments when he's expressing, whether it's verbally or I visually observe it, when he is showing signs that the pot smoking or the usage of pot is now causing some detrimental effects to him.
And it's such a clean example, which is hard with families to identify, where he's not using during the day, comes home and uses. So there's this point, and we talk about this a lot in modules 5 and 6, where we're looking at ways to increase the period of non-use. So if he works 8 hours and usually he travels another hour, that's 9 hours of non-use. What if you met him at the door before he started using, with a couple options that distract him from using for another couple hours, right? We've got this as examples in the modules on the site, where in this case, the wife meets the husband at the door. He usually goes straight to the basement for his first shot of the day. And she says, "Hey, you know, me and the cat, well, we never see much of you anymore. And it's a beautiful day and we missed you. How about going for a walk around the block just once with us, and maybe grabbing a slice downtown and coming back? Would you do that with me?" And, you know, they used to do that, but he'd stopped doing it a long time ago because it was better and cleaner to go straight for the basement. And she managed to get a couple more hours of clean and sober time, abstinent time, and they had a good time together. They enjoyed each other. They used to love to do this. So that is the nuts and bolts of craft. This is behavioral change in increments like this. It sounds crazy to anybody just stepping in and listening to this for the first time. If you've never heard about craft, you're going to say, "You got to be kidding me. That's somehow going to lead to..." And we're saying, absolutely, it's chained together little bits by little bits. And the movement is fast, but you got to trust us. And you got to really thread a needle. You really have to go through this very narrow pathway to get to the other side with your loved one.
Well, and I think we go back to our bigger concept, which is the progress, not perfection piece of this, which is looking at what the function is rather than what the problems are. Because as you, every time you look at that problem, whether it's substance use or a particular behavior, and you only focus on that, not only does it dysregulate you, but it dysregulates the relationship, because that person feels like you're watching them, you're criticizing them, you're not noticing the good. And all of us feel defeated, every single one of us, when all that's happening is somebody's noticing what we're not doing well, as opposed to what we are doing well. So you can see it's like, step back and really, really reinforce the positive. Reinforce what you're seeing has changed, like what Lori and Dominique are saying. Really focus on that. And I think instead of worrying about the pot, if you focus on that and you feed that by noticing, appreciating, acknowledging, and then what Dominique's saying is adding to it by engagement and doing other things, that will get bigger for the person and for you. And it will calm your system down.
It's a good opportunity to talk about the C in craft, community reinforcement and family training. The C, community, comes from its predecessor, CRA, or CRA, community reinforcement approach. That's the genealogy of craft. That's the thing that came prior to the development by Robert Myers of craft. And that stands for community. Because when it's applied to the person with addiction, which is what CRA does, it teaches the person with addiction to do community reinforcement approach. And it's by looking at alternatives in the community that are pro-health, that are low use, that are things that might motivate, and helping your loved one find those things in the community that substitute for the use and that actually diminish use. And that is how, once you start diminishing use on your own, you create the motivation to keep going. And you're actually, for the first time, looking at, that's not such a healthy thing for me to do. It's like, oh my God, I'm thinking about my health. right? So you want your loved one just aiming towards health. And so this kid's doing a lot to do that. I would say, and Lori and I have been talking about this earlier as we go to answer this question, because by the way, this is what we do. We get in these questions and then we hash them out and we write a tailored answer, which we hope is useful to a lot of people. And does he actually, if it gets problematic for the parents, do they ask him to move it out of the house? Because right now he's smoking in the house. What do you think, Lori?
I think it's very early right now. I think it's way too early. And I think approaching this issue, because it's a problem for them, and right now it's not so much a problem for the son. I think that being so focused on trying to change his behavior, instead, the parents need to focus on how to change their behavior to affect change, right? And so I think it's too early. I think going really, really slow with it, he has complied with everything that they're asking for him. And she goes on to say, we didn't come up with a plan for how much he could or couldn't use. And I kind of wonder, do you really need to come up with that plan? Is that really your job? And instead, I really strongly believe that going back to the basic craft principles, just address this according to craft principles, which are, if he's overusing the pot and you're in his presence, remove immediate rewards, right? Like it's too, okay, well, I guess maybe, you know, now's a good time for you to go and lie down. Maybe tomorrow we can talk about this or something like that. But remove immediate rewards, allow for natural consequences, look for wishes and dips, look for him to say, oh, geez, you know, I think I've been smoking too much pot at night and I can't seem to get out of bed and get to work on time. Oh, okay, that's interesting. What do you want to do about that? Look for those wishes and dips. And I think exactly what you were talking about, Dominique, adding in replacement behaviors. Does he typically eat dinner and then head right upstairs and start smoking pot? Instead, like make a suggestion, hey, let's head out and grab an ice cream cone for a little bit. And you're reducing that time frame. Yeah, he's going to smoke pot when he gets back home and you've had the cone together, or he might refuse going out for an ice cream cone tonight. But 3 nights from now, when you do it again, he might say yes. And right then and there, you're reducing use or delaying use until he does get home. But you're also focused on the positive ways that you can affect change with your loved one.
Yeah, and I think another really important point as you're talking, Lori, it's making me think that sometimes when you have marijuana use, the person starts getting like, it looks like they're tired. It looks like they're in bed a lot. It looks like they're fatigued. And the one thing that we're going to put a little asterisk on is look for how it may either be treating depression or mimicking depression, because that's a different issue. What happens is that we, you know, with lots of our loved ones, they are dealing with depression already. And sometimes what pot can do is it makes it feel like, for some people, it's a relief and it makes them feel better and it makes them feel like they're in an alternative way of being. But for some people, it makes them very logy and tired and heavy. And that is very similar to the feeling of depression. Lori's raising her hand. That is not my experience as a former massive pothead. It made me so jacked up and juiced up. It was fabulous. But when you think about it, it's like if you're watching somebody like lose motivation, because that's one of the things about too much use is that it actually can affect motivation. That's one of the biggest issues with smoking pot or using pot. And so that's where you're looking at function, not even at the pot use, but you're looking back at function. So again, like we talk about, it's not, oh, you're smoking too much. It's really, you're noticing you're sleeping, you're missing work. You're not, you know, you're not talking to us anymore. And I think when you're improving the relationship and you're noticing how the other person is behaving and talking about that, it's harder for the other person to argue. It seems like you're sleeping a lot more. It seems like you're talking to me less. It seems like you're walking in and you're not even saying hello. Those are all things that are worthy of comment. But I feel like with all of this, every time we say to anybody, you're smoking too much, you're doing, you know, whatever drug you are too much, or you're doing too many drugs, you're in the danger zone. I'd much rather comment on the behavior and what you're noticing, because that has legs. The other one is subjective and it's not helpful.
Ian, I love this because I say this all the time. Yeah, notice the behavior, say something about the behavior, not the person. Well, you're doing this and you're doing that, versus I notice that you're sleeping in a lot. But then it gives you the opportunity to invite them in and talk to you about it. What's going on? You were always on time. And I noticed lately you've been a little groggy in the morning. And what do you think's going on there? Even ask, like sometimes I say, is it something I shouldn't be worried about, or I should be worried about, or let's talk about this. Tell me what's going on. And so you get the opportunity to invite them in. And that's when you get the opportunity to hear how it's a problem for them.
Or not.
It might still not be, but at least you get them talking about it. And also for this person, I can't imagine what it's like to have these involuntary movements and then have that stop when smoking pot. So recognizing the benefits for him in smoking pot, that's a pretty powerful thing. And also recognizing that, you know what? I see you. I see that you were putting a lot of effort in, and I certainly understand how smoking some pot stops those involuntary movements, and that's a huge benefit. And recognize it.
I might be making this up, but I think they were actually talking about using marijuana for Parkinson's, which is the tremors. And so I don't know if this is true scientifically or if I just heard it through the grapevine, but a lot of what people have found by using marijuana medically is through people accidentally stumbling upon what works, and then they researched it. So, you know, it certainly works for many, many people for sleep. And it sounds like that's what he's using it for as well. There are so many people, and maybe not everybody knows this, but there are people that you are spending time with that you don't have a clue that they're actually using gummies for sleep. So this is not an outlier. This has now become commonplace for people. I was just at a party and my 75-year-old friend was like, yeah, I don't know why they make the little containers for the for the gummies so hard to open. It's like, I'm not a child. She's 75. Never in my wildest dreams would I ever hear that. But that's part of this. It's like people are using it to treat various issues. And the whole reason why there's even the possibility of medical marijuana cards is that's actually been acknowledged by the medical profession. So there are things that it actually does work, and we need to respect people if they found something that works in that way. Good for them. If I'm shaking and the pot makes me stop shaking and that's all I'm doing, that's a great thing. I don't want to be shaking. It's like he found something that works for him. That's great.
Right. And maybe he does end up struggling with amounts or whatever, but he's 22. Give him the chance to figure that out, of what's going to work for him and what's not going to work. Maybe he over imbibes with it for a little while and then he says, I can't keep doing that. I'll reduce it. But it does stop my tremors. It does help me sleep. But he's got to figure out what's going to work for him. And all we can do as family members is support, is be there and support, look for the positive, reinforce the positive, introduce replacement behaviors, and really focus on the positive and reinforce that piece of it.
Yeah, and reinforcement behaviors, community alternatives in your local area. The other thing is to create those lists of options. I mean, I'd like to see them see a psychiatrist at some point and tease apart whether there is depression and if pot is the best thing. So I'd like to see him followed by somebody, because if he's using it, it may not be the best drug for tremors and stuff. And who knows if he's tried other things. So if he's going to be serious about it, let him be a mature person and suggest, perhaps, if you're going to continue this, let's at least get on board a professional who knows about this sort of
thing. Right. And he did actually, in this particular case, he is seeing a psychiatrist. And that's why I say he's complying. The parents asked him, look, we just don't want you to smoke pot off the street. We want you to get a marijuana card. We want you to see a psychiatrist. He agreed. He went and he did it. And he's doing it in a way that's, you know, he's complying. And that's the stuff that I think that mom and dad really need to reinforce. You're putting effort in. We feel like you heard us. Thank you. But well, okay. Great conversation today. Kayla, can you just give us a quick summary?
I thought you did the summary, but I'm going to do it really quickly, which is that in this case, we're talking about marijuana, which can be used medicinally in various ways, and it could also become a problem. And if you have a loved one, in this case, that's changed enough to get psychiatric help, get a medical marijuana card, is communicating with you, we're asking all of you to look at the positive and also look at the community part of this, which means that they're connected, because community is about connection. It's with you, with work, with whatever else that they're engaged in, hopefully with their psychiatrist. And if you focus on the positive, stay engaged, have good communication and open communication, instead of preempting the problem, you get to actually communicate with the person about whether they think it's a problem or not. Whether it's not about whether you think it's a problem, it's whether they think it's a problem. And that's what the communication part is about.
Thank you.
Thanks for listening. We hope this episode of Coming Up for Air spoke to you. If you're listening in today on a podcast platform that isn't the Allies member site, please take a moment to give us a 5-star rating. This helps others find the show more easily. If you have a suggestion for a new topic or a guest for the show, please reach out through the Contact Us form on alliesinrecovery.net. Special thanks to our hosts, our guests, and our production team.